Okay, we are back from module 8, and I suspect that this module may be the reason that many of you are here. We're so excited to have updated our old vision course to include a lot of different vision activity ideas, things that can help you to have engaging lesson plans with your student, to address all of their systems, and to really just get those creative juices flowing.
So that, for me, is the thing that you need to remember as you're doing this. Your creativity as a therapist is still your very best tool. So let's go back and talk about that three-component model of vision real quick. A reminder, visual integrity, that part about visual acuity, refractive status, eye health. Basically, visual integrity is all about, are our kids in the correct glasses? Visual efficiency, are the eyes working together? Is the dynamic near vision focusing system working? Is the accommodation working efficiently? And then finally, we can talk about the processing of that visual information, whether that be visual motor integration, visual analysis, and visual spatial skills. When I get together with my other eyeball nerds and we talk about visual processing, it's much more than visual perception. It is about spatial awareness. It's about where is it and where am I? How do we interact in that? It's about balance. It's about posture. It's about the utilization of all the visual information. As you start working on treatment ideas, remember that when the visual integrity aspect is not at its best, if the visual efficiency part is not at its best, that's going to influence that visual information processing aspect, right? We're going to have a hard time drawing a square if we're seeing a wonky square. So we want to, at all, whenever possible, we want to be able to make sure that at minimum, we have the right glasses. And ideally, we're also having good binocular vision, good visual efficiency. And we're going to give you a whole bunch of ideas to help improve that. Know that without those right glasses, though, you may be fighting an uphill battle that might be a little bit frustrating for you and frustrating for your kiddo as well.
So I just want to talk about what school OTs bring to the table. This is a pyramid of learning. And if you really look at this pyramid of learning, this is all about what OTs and PTs do, right? On the bottom of this pyramid are our major sensory systems, tactile, vestibular, visual, auditory, proprioception. As the pyramid develops, children begin to develop their body scheme, social security, their maturity of the reflexes, and awareness of the two sides of the body. That foundation is where we are so knowledgeable and we can really use our skills to make sure our students have a solid foundation in order to reach the peak of that pyramid to be able to participate in the classroom and learn. So when we're planning our vision activities, it can kind of feel a little overwhelming. There is a delicate balance. We're the first line of defense in terms of vision in many cases for our students, but we are not vision therapists. We see these vision difficulties, but the child may not have access to a proper vision eye exam. Our student is struggling, but their vision system isn't functional. We have other goals to address, but our child isn't progressing. So we have to really weigh out and be aware of the whole picture. And that's what we're so good at, being holistic and looking at our entire child, all of their systems, all of their strengths, and all of their weaknesses, and really using those to set up our treatment plans, our lessons, our activities to support them in their academic learning. One of the most important things that we can do to support our kids is to educate the whole team. We're trying to spread awareness about the importance of vision, about what to look for. Even though we're often the only ones who look at the kids' vision, we don't see all the kids most of the time, but the teachers do. So if we can spread the word and get teachers there, make those referrals if we need to. One of the most important things that we can do as school-based OTs is spread awareness and advocate about the importance of vision and that this is a very commonly overlooked area of difficulty for our students. We need to educate the whole team. Although we're often the only ones who are really looking at students' vision, we don't generally see all the students, but the teachers do. The administrators are aware about it. They need to look at all the children, right? So if we can kind of spread the word about what to look for, that this is an issue. It may not just be a reading problem. It may not just be a motor problem. It may not just be a behavior problem or an attention problem. It could be something going on with this child's visual processing. We need to be the ones who are making those referrals, who are educating parents, who are telling them to go for an eye exam, who may be making those referrals to a TVI if necessary, to a reading specialist if necessary, we need to be working with the whole team. We don't want to be an island. And it's so important for our students' benefit that we're working with everybody. We're looking at the child through our lens, but we need to really respect the skills and the knowledge of our team members to look at the child through their lens as well. That's when we're going to get the whole picture. Consistency for what we're doing is key. So if you can get the parents on board, that's another amazing step forward. If we can get the teachers on board and aware, another amazing step forward. It's just so important that we start educating our school community about this because it's such an ongoing issue.
So Jamie, well said. When I talk about this is we need to be a vision aware therapist. As you're looking, and we tend to all be focused somewhat on looking at the output. What is a child's output? What does their handwriting look like? What is the result of their processing? Vision allows us to make sure that we're getting accurate input to process from. Being a vision aware therapist means looking at this handwriting sample, looking at this reading difficulty, and going back to how is vision affecting this performance? Is there a visual component to this? You're right. We're not interested in making vision therapists. We need vision aware therapists who recognize when there is a visual dysfunction that's potentially at the root cause of this child's functional difficulty.
Perfect. I love that. That's a good quote. So when we're choosing activities to help our children, we do best when we think of activities that address multiple systems. So we know that our first priority is to address their academic and functional goals, right? That's why we're there. But incorporating multiple systems with a functional task is kind of like getting more bang for your buck or working on more deficits in less time. However you want to think of it, it's just best. Rhythm and movement are magic and they help with so many of the systems. So keep that in mind. And incorporate what you already know. Add vision into it. Think of what programs you've already taken and see how can I incorporate that and add a visual component to help my students to strengthen their visual system. When we're using a multi-system approach, we're incorporating movement, we're incorporating balance, their auditory system, bilateral integration of both sides, of top, bottom. Their proprioceptive system is also always very helpful to involve. And rhythm, I find the more I involve rhythm, the more progress my students make. Also cognition, where incorporating things that they're working on within the classroom. And the magic is when we come up with an activity that incorporates all of these different skill sets. So tips for school vision activities, incorporate the academics, like I said before, make sure it's fun and functional. Everything has to be fun. And it usually is when it's OT, but just to keep that in mind, whole body tasks are wonderful. Keep in mind that left brain, right brain connection. You can do vision activities and strengthening the visual system individually or in a group. And that goes back to the module where I talked about multi-tiered systems of support and how we can offer the whole school community assistance when it comes to vision activities and vision awareness. Progress monitoring can be difficult if you're doing it in a large group. It's awesome if you can get the kids to actually progress monitor themselves. So if you're doing something where they're dribbling or putting on a certain number of rings, let's say, have them write down how many they did at the end. It's impossible to monitor a large group of children, especially with such small skills. So if you can make it where they're doing it themselves, that helps you and makes them more aware of their progress and their gains. We want to make sure that our goals are always functional and academically based. And the more we can get parents involved or aware, the better. In this vision activity right here, I'm working with one of my students on the game Guess Who. This student's working on visual discrimination because he's got to problem solve. Is it a boy? Is it a girl? Do they have hair? Do they have a mustache? He's also prone weight bearing on his belly because he's got weak upper body strength. He's wearing his glasses because, of course, we want to make sure his acuity is intact. But then he's also working on fine motor skills and scanning as he looks for the right picture and then puts a question mark over the one that he picked. This is probably something that you've already done. It's just a matter of having that extra know-how of, wow, I already am incorporating all these systems. That's wonderful for the kids. And how can I make it even better?
So anything with a grid activity where we're doing that scanning left to right is definitely going to support more accurate saccades. Bang for the buck, the one activity that's going to get you the biggest result, the quickest, with the shortest effort, if we're going to do field scanning tasks with a nice still head. So for me, we're going to have my kiddo on a balance board. We're going to scan a big space. We don't want to be scanning like a screen. I want to be scanning a pretty large space. And we can use this to locate a specific target. We're going to do this with one eye first, then the other eye. I will also have them do like scanning on a piece of paper, where we're going to make an X on the left margin, X on the right margin. And we're going to go back and forth, making sure that head's still, teaching the size of that paper, the width of that paper. We have saccade strips that we can make from a heart chart. So a heart chart is a grid of 10 letters. We can cut those into strips, put those about 6 inches apart at 6 to 8 feet. Our friend's back on a balance board. We cover one eye. We're going to read left to right, top to bottom. And then we're going to switch back to the other eye, left to right, top to bottom. We're going to make that a little larger. And heart chart decoding, I believe, is still out there. This is a grid of letters that are used to decode secret messages. So you go down 4 and over 2 and you write down those letters. So I use Michigan tracking a couple of different ways. The way they want you to use it, right? That's how we do all of these things. We learn how they want us to use them, and then we figure out how else to use them besides that. So what they want you to do is we're going to scan left to right down that line of text, and we're going to mark out the letters A, B, C, D all the way up by making a pencil. Like, we're going to draw a line A and then circle those letters as we go along, C, and come back down. We're again reinforcing that spatial awareness for the size of the paper, working on that pencil grasp, and still working on that scanning, as well as visual discrimination as we go along. We can take that a step further and just have them call out the first letter of each group of letters. So now we're getting really close to that saccade fixation routine that we typically use in reading. So here's what it looks like. Here's your opportunity to practice a nice field scanning task. So hold your head nice and still. You're gonna cover one eye. I want you to find the A and the B and the C, D. As you're doing that, yes, I'm aware the eye is missing. So this is what the saccade strips looks like. Here's your opportunity to try that out. You're going to cover that eye, and I want you to read B, D, F, R, R, G, H, J, B, Y, K, I, P, L. Then we're going to switch back to the other eye, and we're going to go back and forth. Very still head. Keep your head still. Still heads make for accurate spatial map. So still heads make for still spatial maps. I wasn't hollering. I'm passionate. It's different. So what we're having our friend here do, we're going to hold the beads up and we'll have them look at the red one, or they can touch the red one, touch the yellow, touch the pink. We're going red to pink to red, pink to yellow. So we're going to have them look from bead to bead, keeping that head nice and still. We can pinch those beads to add that proprioceptive aspect. We can have them on a balance board, a balance beam doing that, to throw in a vestibular challenge as well. So this came from one of my friends in Canada, Miss Anna VOT. She does very cool stuff. She's made some heart charts with different little characters on there, and she has them balancing on the balance board. You can see standing heel to toe, and they need to call out the critters that are on their heart charts. This is an amazing picture, right? Because we're doing superhero training. We're getting Mr. Incredible, Iron Man there, ready for their future endeavors.
One of the things I really like about this slide is how each child is standing on something different. So one has a balance disc, one has a balance beam. Not sure exactly what the first boy is standing on, but also each child has a different chart. It can be based on, you know, what they're capable of, what their endurance is, their skill level, their motivation. And that's really cool because it's adaptable. She's doing the same thing, or you're doing the same thing with three kids, but it's all individualized. So that's really creative and smart.
Yeah. So Anna was actually doing a program with 5-year-olds at the beginning of kindergarten to improve oculomotor skills that early. So good stuff.
Here's an example of a much younger child, or this could be used with a special needs child on a sorting task, but it also is saccades, because they're going from left to right, sorting by color, hopping from toothpick to toothpick to find where they need to put the Fruit Loop. Very, very simple, but works on a few different things.
So the thing I like about this one in particular is the eye-hand aspect of this. So anytime we're tying that visual system to hands, anytime we're putting eyes and hands together, we're building a good system.
Keep going. No, we already did P. A,
B,
R,
L, T.
Not T, H. We're in this row.
L, T.
Good.
I, U.
Good boy. Last one.
O, U.
No, we already G.
G.
Good.
This was my student from before whose vision, he was seeing double, it turned out. I mean, he already had his glasses and was receiving, you know, help from a vision professional. But under the consultation with his optometrist, I was working on some saccades and he was still struggling with letter recognition at this point. But this is an activity where he's shifting focus from left to right. He also was doing patterns because I have done where I had him do only the green ones. We did the same sheet working on letter sounds. So we would do zzz and x and eh and b instead of x and z and b and etc. This is something that you could do to a metronome to try to get a rhythm going if it's doable for your student. But he's supposed to be going from the second row to the fourth row, and he was really, really struggling with it. Here's the argument about tracking or pursuits.
As we begin, as me and my eyeball friends and you guys as well are now part of this, as we work on collaboration, collaborating with optometry, we need to have a more consistent language. This is part of the results of my friend, Dr. Amber Fessler, of her research when she graduated from Salus. Part of that is using the same words, calling things the same thing. In vision world, the ability to follow a moving target with your eyes is called a pursuit. It is not called tracking. We can go a step deeper than that and also say that as we are reading lines of text, we are also not performing tracking. We are performing a series of saccades and fixations. But within your teams in a school-based climate, tracking is going to be the agreed-upon word for eyes moving across text. You can talk about tracking as it relates to eye moving about text, but we're going to talk about pursuits as it relates to the ability to follow a moving target in space with your eyes, right? We're going to need these tracking if we're going to follow a ball. If we're going to watch a tennis match, those sort of things. There are different ways we can assess tracking. We talked about that in the assessment part. So this is one of my favorites first. In the picture, that's called Let's Go Fishing. And love some Let's Go Fishing. That goes on, you need to pluck your fish out of there. I'm going to leave that there. Never mind. I was so excited when I saw one of the ones that you sent me. I'll let you talk about that. I like bubbles. They move down nice and slow. And we can pop those bubbles. So back in the day, we used to call it balloon volleyball, but we don't call it balloon volleyball anymore. What do they call it now? My kids are in their 20s. So they were not of the Bluey generation. But there was a blue thing. There was Blue's Clues for my kids. So there was still a blue-related character. So we can use a Brock string as well for tracking. And we have a video of that coming up shortly as well. Because that one's Miss Jamie's. Put the disc with the letters on it, and then you need to stack them. I love it. Back in the day, they would put a pegboard on the turntable, and you had to copy a pegboard pattern on the rotating pegboard. But yeah, I like this. I need to make me a disc to go on to my top of Let's Go Fishing.
Yeah, this is fun. And you're working, but again, you're changing it up and you're making it a little more academic. Like if someone were to walk into our room and see us playing Go Fishing, it looks like we're just having fun. Whereas with something like this, you can justify, I'm working, building sight words when they're finished. You can have them change their body position. You can use other game pieces. So these are just like magnetic Scrabble letters that I had. The sheet that I made is just a piece of paper that I laminated. So it's not magnetic, but I just use magnetic letters anyway. We have all kinds of good stuff laying around our room. It would be easy to use magnetic letters that go on the magnetic wall. I mean, there's just so many different ways that you can do it. You can make laterality rules where you have to do the pieces that are on the left side of you with your right hand or vice versa. And you can incorporate the vestibular system, get the kids on a balance disc or a balance board while they're trying to do this, and that really make it challenging.
So here, my friend is on a balance board. His job is to bump that ball on the black piece of tape. And he's doing a nice job of that. He's tracking that ball as it's moving near to far. So there's a nice convergence component to this.
Okay. One of the barriers to using a Marsden ball in the school setting is that school OTs often have a very small space and they often don't have a consistent space. So they don't have a place where they can hang something consistently. So the next video that you're going to see is a way that I came up with for making myself a spot to hang my Marsden ball. but I can also move it from place to place, or I can hang multiple of them just on a random drop ceiling. So this is just a sponge holder from the Dollar Tree that you're supposed to stick on your bathroom wall and put your sponge in there, or maybe your kitchen sink. Oh. I tied my Marsden ball to it and I stuck it up to the drop ceiling, and voila, there's my Marsden ball. But now obviously I can't leave that hanging in the middle of the hallway. So I put a little command hook over by the fire alarm and I tucked it away. So now the kids weren't pulling at it and smashing it as they walk by. So that was a way. A year I ended up turning the BOSU ball over. So now it was more like a wobble board.
So we're going to talk about the Brock string as a tool to improve convergence and divergence. If you're going to work on this, it's important that the child has had an eye exam. The doctor is kind of on board with working with those things, any sort of guidelines they may give you. There are doctors. I hear more and more stories about docs that are sending recommendations to school-based therapists for interventions. So that is happening more and more. The Brock string, what we have in the video, so we have the Brock string here, kind of downward. And we're going to look at the bottom bead. And as they go from bead to bead, you should see, as you see her eyes, move in from one bead to the next. As she's looking at the furthest bead, they should see one bead with the two strings that meet right at the front of the bead. So they see one bead because both eyes are focused on one point in space. You see two strings because the brain's paying attention to both eyes. Going from bead to bead, as they come to the next bead, we should see an X through the middle of that bead. So we get one eye and then the X through the bead there.
Right.
So this is what you should see as you look at that furthest bead, the two strings meeting right at the front, then the middle bead, then the one up close. The Brock string should be slightly low, and then you change the focus from one bead to the next. With bug on a string, we're just going to look at one bead, and we're going to focus on that bead and slowly pull that in, making sure the eyes are moving together and maintaining that convergence as the bead comes closer. So that one's bug on a string. So with this, we have the straw and the toothpick, and this was version one of that. This is version two. So what this allows me to do is I'll hold the cup away from the child. We're gonna bring that in towards them. I'm gonna watch their eyes, and then we're gonna put that toothpick into the cup. So that gives me the opportunity to watch their eyes as we're working on that convergence. The pool noodle here, we can put the pool noodle straight and put toothpicks in the pool noodle. I recently learned a better way. You're going to see it in a second.
From who?
From you. Like the pipe cleaners work. Like I love the pipe cleaners going into there. Look. And Miss Jamie has like the psycho pool noodle with straws all over the place. I love it. That is awesome. And I like the pipe cleaner going into there better than the toothpick.
What I like about the pipe cleaners is that they're color coordinated. Right. So if you get a regular package of plastic straws, the child has to not only get the pipe cleaner into the straw, but they're putting the red pipe cleaner into the red and white straw. And I did this with a metronome for them. So we're working on eye-hand coordination. We're working on matching colors as well as fine motor skills and convergence.
So we could even have a model at a distance of the color dots. And so we need to look at a distance and see what color comes next. So now we add in a bigger near-far challenge doing that as well. Cool stuff.
And here's an example of how to make it a little more challenging. Instead of them all going in a row, they're crazy wonky all over like a porcupine, but it's still working on the same skills. So here's a simple activity working on oral motor skills, a straw in the child's mouth, and then having to take little round circles made of pipe cleaner and put them onto the straw.
I'm very clearly not utilizing pipe cleaners enough.
Or straws. Straws are the best.
Yeah. I need more pipe cleaners.
Okay. So here's another straw activity to change it up a little bit. These are just little foam squares with holes. So here's another way to adapt that straw activity. This is a silly straw and just some foam shapes with a hole in them. And the child is threading those shapes onto the silly straw. Great convergence and divergence. You can put patterns into this, fine motor skills and proprioception because they're moving the things along. This is a little bit like bug on a string.
Here's from my friend Anna VOT. Doing a similar thing where we're stacking things on the tongue depressor. So she's doing cool stuff there.
So this is when I go to Home Depot or Lowe's and I load up on my free paint sticks. And then I get all friendly with my custodian and ask him to drill holes every 1 inch in my paint sticks. And then I adapt it to work on convergence and divergence. And what I did with this student was I had him doing light bright pegs and he had to match the colors. The cool thing with doing it every 1 inch is you know how far the child is working. So the first hole in the paint stick is 1 inch, the second one is 2 inches, 3 inches, and so on.
So we're back at Home Depot, and now we're going to get a fluorescent bulb protective tube, which perfectly holds a ping pong ball inside of it. So what we're going to do here is we're going to tilt that ball up and down, and we're going to stop the ball underneath specific stickers. We can add letters in there. And they need to stop the ball under specific letters. I've seen this as well, where we use it as sort of as a visual motor integration activity, where we're on a balance board and we need to roll the ball back and forth and start park those in front of letters as well.
Yeah. And so that can be used for convergence and divergence, or if you're holding it horizontally, you can use it for pursuits.
Yeah, pursuits. Yes. So accommodation, we're going back to working on accommodative part of the near vision focusing system. That ciliary body in the eye is going to contract and relax. It's going to be relaxed at a distance, letting the lens stay thin. Up close, it contracts and gets thicker. It has the properties of a muscle, so it can fatigue and it can spasm. So this is an important part of the near vision triad. So accommodative efficiency is important for near vision focusing and part of that dynamic process for near vision focusing. Those kiddos that are rubbing their eyes, that are blinking excessively, we get a kiddo that's sort of looking at something from the side like this. That is also another way of squinting. That is something that makes me think there may be an accommodative problem here as well. So accommodative problems are uncomfortable. They're physically painful. A lot of times our kids that are farsighted, that do not see well up close, are having a lot of these signs of accommodative dysfunction when they haven't had an eye exam. So we may notice some of those things in a kiddo who is farsighted when they're doing near work.
And accommodation is one of the things that really should be done under the guidance of an optometrist. We're not going to just go in and try to be a vision therapist to address a student's accommodation. But if you are under the guidance of an optometrist, we're going to give you some examples of some things that you can do to address it.
So this is called a heart chart. If you Google heart chart on the internet, H-A-R-T, they'll have those. You'll find several of those. So what happens here is we have the 8 by 10 grid of letters at 6 to 8 feet. We have another one that's up close, that's handheld. So you're going to have your friend read the letters at a distance. We're going to do all these accommodation tasks are always done with one eye covered. So we're going to cover an eye. We're going to read the letters at a distance, and then we're going to read the second row up close, third row at a distance, then the fourth row up close. As they progress on this and do this quicker, we can do one letter at a time going back and forth to further exercise that accommodation. Again, this is definitely one of the things you want to make sure this child has had an eye exam. It's something that the eye doctor recommends to improve on that. We can take any of those convergence tasks, and when we cover an eye, it takes out most of the convergence aspect of that, and it makes it an accommodation task.
And just as a reminder, the heart chart is in your resources. We do have a copy of that for you, so you don't have to Google it.
Oh, cool. So this has become one of my favorite ones, and the kids dig it too. So she has a spotted card here, and I have a spotted card that's about 5 feet away. And so she is going back and forth looking for that match on the spotted cards. And I love it. My kids yesterday, I had my kiddo that doesn't remember U's and V's. And every card she tells me, I don't think there's a match on this one. And we have to get her to slow down, see what she's looking at, and appropriately find that. So there's a nice saccade aspect to this. There's a near-far aspect to this. There's a visual memory aspect to this. And the kids think it's fun. The kids like this one.
So here's an idea to change it up and make it a directionality lesson. I had students where they were looking from forward to backward, but then I also had them actually, they had to take a step forward or take a step backward or take a step to the right, take a step back. So that was another way to incorporate directionality. So here are some examples of how to incorporate multi-system activities. So this is a vertical surface.
Cute.
What color is it?
Black.
Okay, let's look on the board. Do you have a black cue?
No.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm very sure.
Okay.
No.
Okay, so it goes in the no file.
No. No.
Good. Okay.
No.
Okay, do the next one.
No, 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 go, 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 go.
What did you get?
Three and three.
Don't bend it. It's just a three. Okay, look at the board. Do you have a black three?
No.
Good. Where does it go?
In the no pile.
Great.
So this child is working on so many things at once. He's holding the cards. He's turning them over. So he's working on forearm rotation, which is great for scissor skills. He's working on visual perception and discrimination by looking at the cards and looking at the cards that are on the vertical surface to see if he can find a match. He was also working on some number and letter recognition because he was only in kindergarten.
When we're layering, and that's been the biggest thing for me going when I started working with the kids, their brains respond very well to good heavy loads, challenging those multiple systems, really making those systems work together. That still amazes me how much we can accomplish in a single activity.
So a simple cicade activity where the student is doing cross crawls with their cicades. So they're working on bilateral integration, top, bottom, left, right coordination, as well as cicades.
Our kids respond so well when we're doing these activities that really challenge multiple systems at the same time. When we get those systems integrating, working well together, like many, many cool things happen. Lots of cool stuff happens.
Yeah. So here's another multi-system activity. This child is field scanning on the whole board, looking for specific letters that are in front of him. And he's got to find them and arrange them on his board, which is in front of him, in the same order. So this was pretty hard for him. Just the scanning, the finding, the staying focused, all of the moving pieces for him were not easy. So this was a balance activity with a pattern. So he had to hit twice with his left hand and then once with his right hand while balancing, you know, while coordinating, while tracking pursuits to follow the ball. This is very similar to a Marsden ball, but just with a regular hanging ball, like a tether ball.
Are those boomsticks?
Yes, thank you. These were with boomsticks or boom whackers. So they made different noises, which added an auditory component, which was fun. So in this task, my student is looking at cicade strips on the wall, but they're colors. And then she has to find, these actually are not pipe cleaners. These are little plastic rings from a game called Thumbs Up, which is a great visual game if you ever are looking to add to your toolbox. And she had to match the colors to the color strips. So she's working on convergence, divergence, oral motor because the straw is in her mouth. Ocular motor skills, cicades, and visual discrimination to go by the color, then find the color on the shelf next to her and get them on. That one really worked on a lot of things. So this kiddo, I just have to say, you've got to use your vertical space. OTs often have very small workspaces. Try not to cover it up with posters and things that you don't need when you can use it for your activities, because vertical surfaces are great for our kids' upper extremity, for resting their arms on the wall so that they can have a proper pencil grasp. This is contact paper, which is on the wall, and it's labeled like a grid, A, B, C, D, E, F, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 down the side. And then I had him reading the chart. So D3 was green. I actually had a little plastic cup taped to the door with the pom-poms in it. So balancing on the balance board, he had to get into the cup, get a green one, and then get back over to the contact paper chart and put the green pom-pom in the right spot. So this is working on so many things, left to right. It's also working on graphing skills, which is for math, reading the color words, recognition of the colors, fine motor skills, and balance, you name it.
So yes, in my room, there is stuff all over the walls. There's all
sorts
of scanning.
Here's another one where my student is. Yeah, me too. Same. And I also actually, in one of the classrooms, they were throwing away a cork board. And I was like, I have a little bit of empty space on one of my walls. So I had the custodian cut the cork board for me and we painted it purple. I made my kids paint it. And now I use it all the time. They post their worksheets on it. So they're working on a vertical surface. It's awesome.
Very nice.
So this is a multi-system activity. My student is tracking the letters from left to right on a large post-it easel pad. I really love these because you can rip them off and stick them to the wall. Love that. And he's working on letter recognition. He's shifting his focus from near to far because he's also pulling himself on the swing, which is bringing him closer and further away to the chart. He's also scanning from left to right. We did it by letter recognition, and then we did it by letter sounds because he was in kindergarten. So that's always something great to incorporate. And he's working on his core strength because he's laying prone, pulling on this half of a broken jump rope to get himself over there. And I tried to get him to do it to a rhythm to keep that auditory component as well. So I love dribbling as an activity for kids. I think it works on so many different things. I think I got the idea from the BOT assessment because they use dribbling to assess bilateral coordination. It does also work on eye-hand coordination. The child has to keep visual attention on the ball and they're focusing from the middle of their body to low down. This was one of the things that I did in my OMG group. I had the kids do it as many times as they could. They also had to count. So after the 1 minute was up, they were like, okay, I did that one 14 times or 44 times, whatever it was, they had to write it down. Then we did it again with the other hand. And then we did it again with alternating hands, which again, that goes back to kind of the way the BOT does it. But, you know, our assessment tools we can use as learning tools because they're, you know, they're great for looking at certain things.
In my clinic, I do a lot with dribbling and bouncing and catching, those sort of things with the balls as well. Those are good, a good tool.
So this student is laying on a yoga mat. He had to sit up in order to see, which was permitted. That's fine. He's using one leg to trace an infinity circle, and he's got to track the letters with his foot. Now, this was difficult for him. He didn't have great core strength, and he did also have some near vision and visual focusing issues. This works on eye-leg coordination, left-right coordination, and core strength. Also, the rhythm and the auditory system, because we've got the metronome going. So this is something that I took from a Ball of Vizx course that I went to. And I loved the task of coordinating both sides at the same time. My student had definite difficulty with it. So he was working on eye-hand coordination, left-right coordination, shifting his focus from middle to low, and of course, bilateral coordination. This is one of my favorite activities from the Dollar Tree. I always look at the Dollar Tree in the sticker book section when I'm there. This is a peel and stick book. And they have all different kinds. They have princess ones, unicorn ones, dinosaur ones, fish ones. This was an under the sea picture. And basically it gives you a grid with like 1 to 50 numbers in these different squares. And then it gives you on the other side 50 stickers. And each sticker has a number in the corner, but they're all mixed up. So you don't know what the picture is going to look like while you're building it. You're just matching the numbers. So the student has to shift from the graph sheet to the sticker sheet. They have to have number recognition to be able to sequence what they're doing. They have saccades as they're bopping from graph to graph, from box to box. Visual discrimination of looking at, you know, does this picture go here? Wait a minute, this doesn't make sense because they're filling in the incomplete part of the picture. So there's a lot of visual perception things going on there. And I love this for a student that I see twice a week where I kind of run out of things to do, or I might want something that takes a little bit longer or something that I can set him up with while I go to set up another activity because it takes a while. So I may do it over multiple sessions. So this student is using oral motor skills and a straw to try to blow. Oh, this tiny little pomade's a lot because she's going to make sure she doesn't blow too hard to get the pom-pom over the edge of wiki sticks. I used wiki sticks to build this, and she's pushing the pom-pom through the... So this student is doing one of my OMG activities. She's blowing a small pom-pom along a maze path. She's got to keep her eyes on the pom-pom. She's got to make sure that she is not blowing too hard. So there's an aspect of breath control, oral motor skills, eye-hand coordination, and then convergence as she's keeping her eye on the pom-pom right in front of her. So this is another take from the BOT. The BOT has you throwing a tennis ball at a target. a lot of my students really struggle with this. So I started bigger with a kickball, and I also put a visual spot. I don't know if you can see it, but there's a green dot on the floor. So I want the student for catching it. Dual tracking, shifting focus from middle to low, bilateral skills, and again, that self-monitoring piece where I had them keep track of how many times they were able to do the task successfully within a 1 minute time frame.
Very good. I have a wall here that we like to bounce tennis balls off of, and that'll be as we're working on catching, that tends to be our last step, is bouncing the tennis balls off the wall.
So in this activity, I had the students in all fours, as you can see, doing kind of the bottom half of a spinal balance task. It was based on my yoga knowledge. I actually used to teach yoga, and I love yoga for our students. And it is something that's recommended by AOTI Choosing Wisely. This works on strengthening. They're doing upper body weight bearing. But if you can see on the yoga mat, I had a red dot on the left corner of the yoga mat and a yellow dot on the right corner of the yoga mat. And I had the students keeping their head straight, but shifting their eyes from left to right as they did the leg movements. So they were supposed to be, as they're doing their left leg back, they're doing their right eye to the right. So that was a little tricky for some of my kids, but it was a great activity. And I really was able to notice a lot when I observed my students doing this.
J, C, T, A, R, H,
So you can see in this activity, I used the wall because we love using the wall. I set up letter strips, but as buttons, like kind of looking like M&Ms, all different letters, color coded. So then I could change up the activity. Okay, we're only going to do the reds. Okay, we're only going to do the greens. We're going to do every other letter. I was able to notice when they said the letter, if they were skipping or if they were missing a line, I was able to kind of track that. So that was interesting as well.
We mentioned this a little bit when we were talking about dyslexia. But for me, at the core of letter reversals, particularly in the beginning, is we are applying the rules of an object to a symbol, right? All throughout their life, a cup is a cup. If it's upside down, if it's backwards, if it's on its bottom, whatever, it's still a cup. And this has worked for everything in life until they come to a lowercase b. And suddenly, if it's facing a different way, it's something entirely different. So that is part of the obstacle to get overcome. And then we have, again, as we mentioned, our friends with dyslexia, but I will tell you this occurs in non-dyslexic kids as well, is that directional awareness. When we start talking about something being on the left side, on the right side, do we really understand, like, what does left mean? What does right mean? There is a visual discrimination aspect where is there an acuity problem where we can't tell which way the letter is facing, or perhaps a visual discrimination issue, a visual processing problem that's occurring as well, where we're having a hard time seeing which way that letter is facing. The other thing that I see that's probably the most common thing is our kiddos are looking faster than they can see. So their eyes are moving really quick, but their brain is lagging behind their eyes a bit. So this can also come down to, are we back to reading in tube and we're not seeing the whole word, we're not seeing the whole object. So what does the research say about letter reversals? Learning letters is the first time that a child learns that an item becomes something different based on the way that it's facing, right? We talked about that. A chair is a chair is a chair is a chair until we get to a lowercase b, and then suddenly everything changes when it's facing a different way. Letter reversals are common and appropriate until a child is about 6 or 7 or 8 years old. We want to see those gone by the end of second grade, but in my clinic, I'm looking to see those fading away before we're out of first grade. So I'm going to be working on reversals, left-right awareness, those sort of things as we're wrapping up first grade. So we did some studies. After the age of 7 or 8, the kiddos that are having problems with letter reversals tend to also be the kids that are having difficulty with reading. They found that those kiddos with visual, spatial, and left-right body awareness problems were also the kids that were most likely to be having problems with letter reversals, and suggested working on this left-right awareness would improve letter reversals. Yeah, they were on point there. That's an effective strategy. Our friends with ADHD tend to do a much better job of looking faster than they're seeing. So as they're identifying reverse letters, that reaction time variability associated with a bit of impulsivity. And according to this study, this inability to suppress visually symmetric information. Not sure about that, but I know the impulsivity and that looking faster than they're seeing is definitely playing a role with in letter reversals with our friends with ADHD. So I kind of think of this one step at a time as I begin to work on treating letter reversal problems. First, is their visual recognition. Are they seeing what they're looking at, and are they seeing the whole thing? So I want them to slow down and see what they're looking at. Then we're going to start looking at, can they tell the difference between these two things, whether these are two words, two letters, two objects. So next we're going to work on visual discrimination, and then we're going to work on visual memory tasks in order to support that. So this activity is called Slap Tap. And so what they have is a line in the middle with a dot on the left, a dot on the right, or a dot directly on the line. So he's scanning that page left to right, top to bottom. If the dot is on the left side, they're going to tap with their left hand, right hand with the right, both hands if it's on the line. So this does a nice job with visual discrimination, forcing them to see, is this left or right, then tying it to their bodies with left or right. Slap taps, I believe, included in your resources as well. And these get quite advanced where they can include hands and feet and all sort of things. But this will get us that first, one of the things that'll get us that first visual discrimination, noticing is on the left or is it on the right, and then tying that to the body.
I'm like so they, frozen.
This is a great book. This is by Dr. Kenneth Lane. It has 5 graded activities to work on recognition of letter reversals. The first one has it's very much like a visual perceptual thing. Look at this one and find it here. But the choices are all reversed and flipped aspects, reversed and flipped versions of the first one. And then it goes into find the letters that are reversed, then match the uppercase letter to its lowercase, is that its lowercase letter. So these are nice. I think the whole book's only about $20, and you just point in it so you don't need to make copies or anything. So for me, how do we know a child has a difficult time with letter reversals? By their writing sample, right? They're writing, they're using the wrong letters when they're writing. They're using the wrong letters when they're reading. So this is a PQDB chart. You can find these all over the place. So what our friend has to do, and I've since modified this a bit, we're scanning down the path, left to right, top to bottom. And every time they see a given letter, they see a P, they have to tell me a word that starts with the letter P. So the name of the letter is not very relevant. We don't really talk about the letter name that much as we're working with letters and words. What's most important is the sound. So I'll have them, I want you to find me a letter, give me a word that starts with the letter P, puppy. So every time as you're scanning down the row and you see a P, you say puppy. Puppy, 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 puppy. So we do this going through each letter. And then you need to give me a word that starts with a B and a D. How about a ball and a dog? And we're going to scan that left to right, top to bottom again. And we're going to do ball, dog, dog, ball, dog, ball. And matching that sound with the letter. Comprehensive eye exam is required every year, not a pediatrician screening. I have a t-shirt that says, when was your last eye exam? And so this is a very important question we need to be doing our best in a school-based context to find the answer to. I know it is not easy for you guys, and I know that you're several steps removed from having that, but not having the appropriate eye exam is going to affect your outcome. Vision affects function. What? Really? Yeah. So we want to be able to recognize those times when we're looking at output. We want to throw in there, is this a problem of... is this a sensory problem? Is this a reflex problem? Is this an issue of muscle strength? Is this neuromuscular? Is it a coordination thing? We want to go and start with vision, because vision is the input side. Those other things affect the output. A vision diagnosis is not required. What we need is the functional problem with a visual basis. Being a vision aware therapist offers new insight to the root cause of your student's problems. It's going to offer you unique opportunities for unique interventions. And when you do that, you're going to get new and improvement in your child's performance as well. So my closing remarks, be creative, do the thing that makes us so valuable. We know about fun. We know about kinesiology. We know about developmentally appropriate games. We know these things that make us good at this. And now we've sort of a new way to address some of the functional problems for our kids.